Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. Yes. You know, we've talked a lot about, and I've emphasized the idea that sometimes bipartisanship isn't exactly what you want. It would be good if they were all going to do the right thing, but when they're doing the wrong thing, and I've all argued, you know, that my experience in Washington revealed that there is a lot of bipartisanship, especially behind the scenes, how the budgets get passed, how the military budget gets taken care of, and how liberals get their spending and conservatives get their spending. And yet I see it coming to an end, and they're not solving the problem because, in a way, the country's not solvent. They don't have enough money, and it's not as easy to divvy up the stolen goods. And this goes on. But right now, we're witnessing the fact that there's strong bipartisanship on a subject we talked about last week, and that has to do with sanctions. And the story goes that Trump is a Putin buddy.
Yeah.
And that he's fighting everybody else. But, you know, sometimes that doesn't pan out as well because, you know, he ends up not changing policies at all. And sometimes we don't know exactly where his policies are. But now that sanctions were passed almost unanimously, the Russians have the nerve to retaliate. And they're implying that maybe we don't need 1,200 diplomats in the embassies over in Russia, and they sent 755 home. I wonder if this is going to solve the problem, or is it going to accelerate the Cold War that's been restarted?
Well, you know how the media is. They're reporting this as if this was an unprecedented thing. There was no antecedent to this move by Russia. But in fact, as we know, President Obama, one of his parting shots was to send a bunch of Russians from their embassy in Washington back home and to seize a couple of Russian-owned properties in the United States. So this is a retaliation. 755, I think they said we have enough spies in Moscow already anyway. Were you struck by that number? I didn't realize there were that many people working in Moscow.
Well, I didn't know how many were there. I knew we had way too many, and we had a lot. And my complaint during the campaign was, it's too bad they don't use them for diplomacy.
Yeah.
But they were using them more, I think it's well known that the CIA is very involved. They're very much into the spy business. And yet today is a consensus, especially the politicians in Washington. I don't think so much the people that we talk outside of Washington, but the consensus is that it's all Russia's fault, and Russia has been spying on us, and we have to stomp it. And it's very bipartisan. This is where I sort of, you know, am befuddled by how absurd this is getting. And I want to read a couple quotes on what's going on, because, you know, we have a new chief of staff,
yes.
John Kelly. He's a general. He's going to straighten this out. Maybe he's going to help Trump win some of these fights and not, you know, roll over. But it turns out that his message just sounds like the Democrats. And that's what really, you know, bewilders me, that he's taken this position. But I'm going to read this to just give you an idea of what I'm concerned about. His new chief of staff, that, of course, is John Kelly, at last week took a strong public stand affirming the U.S. intelligence community's conclusion that the Kremlin tried to influence the election in favor of Trump. Well, there's a few of us that said there's nothing conclusive about it. It's only conclusive by the neocon media and the Democrats for political reasons,
yeah.
And some Republicans said that's not true. But no, here's the guy that's going to run the show, and he said that. Then he goes on to say, this article says, Kelly joined with other CIA directors in the intelligence community. You know, they came together, and they say it's all Russia's fault, you know, and who all expressed their support last week for the intelligence community's findings. Well, the findings were inconclusive, but now they're in endorsing that. And then he goes on to say, this is what is a little crazy. In break with Trump's top intelligence and homeland security officials affirms Russia's election meddling. So it claims they're breaking with Trump. But why does he appoint these people? You know, if he's breaking with Trump, it just doesn't add up. I mean, somebody has to, someday we'll figure it out, but I don't think it's going to be easily figured out, whether it's philosophic, whether it's conspiracy, whether it's medical or what, how these things occur.
But the breaking is a funny word. I mean, I served on your staff for a number of years in Washington, and so did my colleagues. I could never imagine an idea. McAdams breaks with Ron Paul on foreign policy. I mean, how is he going to do? He wants to put America first in foreign policy. He wants to have better relations with Russia. And then he hires as his top guy who will control the other staff, someone who's an absolute cold warrior, who says that the Russians actually got his own boss elected into office.
Yeah, and, you know, our theme or our talk today is talking about how the bipartisanship works and bringing these together, and it just is utterly amazing. But Politico had sort of an article related to this, and Politico says, members of both parties have grown concerned about Trump's eagerness to befriend Putin, despite strong evidence of Russian interference in the 2016 election and multiple investigations alleging links between Trump association and the Kremlin. They didn't overstep the boundaries, but the implication is obviously, you know, that the both parties and the sanctioned folks proves that the both parties are doing this, and whether it's true or not. You know, the other thing is let's say a little bit of this happened, and a little bit of it probably did. I imagine the Russians try to keep a tab on things.
But everyone
whether,
does, yeah.
whether or not they had any influence on the election, I rather doubt it. And if they did, we're pretty stupid. You know? But I don't think they did. But maybe they did. But even if they did and there was proof, it doesn't rise to the occasion to start a Cold War. And this is what they're implying, that this is so bad. But they never do what we do here, and that is, compared to what? Compared to the champions of all champions, the mother of all interference in election is, unfortunately, for us to defend our country, it's the United States of America. And we've cited the statistics since the World War II, how many times we've been involved, how many times we have participated in coup, and yet these lies pervade. And, you know, what about the lies on the immediate issue here? Because it's all punishing Russia. Where do they start with this? You know, the property was one thing, but it starts with Russia committing aggression against Ukraine, and that's where it starts. And yet, the evidence is very, very clear, but never hardly spoken. I bet it's probably not spoken in Washington ever. And that is how the coup came about with NATO participating in the overthrow of a government in Ukraine.
Yeah, and it's now if it's presented at all, it was the people rose up and got rid of a corrupt Putin-backed dictator in Ukraine. Not that the U.S. started instigating and meddling in Ukraine's internal affairs. You know, even you talk about people who contradict their boss, Nikki Haley, the president's ambassador to the UN. She said, we'll never have better relations with Russia until they give Crimea back. And someone noted, that's about as likely as the U.S. giving Texas back to Mexico. It's not going to happen. So essentially you're saying we are never going to improve relations. And that's exactly the opposite of what your own boss said on the campaign trail.
Yeah, and but I always get disturbed by the fact that they're not willing, you know, to look at things objectively. But that's not their goal. Their goal is to promote a foreign policy of interventionism. The neocons are riding high. You know, Bill Kristol probably has more influence in Washington than Donald Trump, and he might be part of the reason that they can put pressure on there. The other problem, of course, is we don't know the philosophy that the president has, and it's a lot easier, you know, for him to go either way if he doesn't have a precise philosophy. And yet we know more about the consistency of the vice president. And the vice president was in Estonia over the weekend mm-hmm. and gave this major talk. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't looking for an opening to have better relationships with anybody, especially Russia. I mean, that would be the crime of the century if we did that. So he has this very, very hawkish, but he's very consistent. He is a hawk. He thinks that we should take on militarily, and be very strong in this sense. But that approach, of course, from our viewpoint, is, very dangerous.
And this is despite evidence, and you even mentioned it in your column today, the evidence that President Trump was elected, particularly in areas of the country that suffered the most casualties in the war, the places most affected by war, voted for Trump. And the message is clear. We want less war overseas. So what does he do when he gets in office? He surrounds himself with these war hawks. You know, there was a great piece in the American Conservative today. Ron Maxwell, who's such a great director, Gods and Generals, Copperhead, which was a great movie. But he had a really, really interesting piece. And he points out that it basically Trump's entire foreign policy team was hijacked by Romney's people. You know, which makes it ironic because Trump humiliated Romney. Remember, after the election, he had him sit there through this dinner. But Romney has the last laugh because, to the person, the top foreign policy people for Trump were all on Romney's team, all of his staff.
And of course, now Romney looks like a great statesman because in the last campaign, he says it's Russia we have to be worried about. So he was preparing the way. He was a loyal soldier in promoting this acceleration of the Cold War. It seems like they can't be without the Cold War because, how do you run an empire if you don't maintain your power? And how do you maintain the military-industrial complex if you don't have an enemy? So it fits in. But I think what's happening is they're up against the wall because of what I've talked about a lot, and that is the economics of the situation, that we're not going to be able to afford it. And empires don't come down because all of a sudden they get invaded. They come down internally. It falls apart internally. It falls apart morally, and it falls apart economically and financially, and then they overstep their bounds. And as the empire becomes weaker, they become more aggressive. So they're getting worried. So Trump's sort of in the middle of this. We know he likes power. It's just what kind of a power does he like? You know, he didn't like NATO and some of these international organizations, which was fine with me. But then again, that wasn't his position. You know, his position was maneuvering, and now NATO is okay. Maintaining the order that he wants. But there's lots of things going on, and the rise of the power of China, I think, is something that is in this. But of course, we're talking more about Russia and these sanctions. But China was involved in these sanctions too, and Iran and North Korea. North Korea and China is a big issue. So the world is, I think, changing rapidly, and the hinge that pulls it together, I think, is the dollar. And when that goes, these political events are going to be much more important, and they'll explode in importance. And unfortunately, if you have a Cold War, it doesn't take as much to shift to a hot war.
Yeah.
And some of them don't care. Some of them, some of these hardcore neocons actually think that war is necessary, for the good of the people, and that's the only way you bring out greatness of a nation is to have great wars and have victors.
And I think Trump is particularly vulnerable now because they're going to sell him on the idea, have a nice little war, get this stuff off your back, But back to Maxwell, he makes some great points. I didn't know this. Rex Tillerson, when he was first named Secretary of State, who did he turn to for advice on staffing the State Department? Dick Cheney and Condi Rice. Those are the people he turned to.
You've ruined my day.
I know. And even the lesser-known people, Maxwell talks about, this fellow Brian Hook. No one's ever heard of him. He's not a top neocon. He's head of policy planning at the State Department. You look into him, he was a foreign policy advisor to Mitt Romney when he ran for president. He was a founder of this John Hay Initiative, which we've written about at the Institute, super neocon outfit. This is his background, Kurt Volker, McCain Institute. Wes Mitchell, Center for European Policy Analysis, is funded by Lockheed Martin, funded by the Pentagon. A real neocon, Nadia Shadlow, Senior Program Officer for the Smith Richardson Foundation. They're the ones that fund all of the neocon think tanks. These are the people that are just, you know, worming their way in. So even if he wanted to have a foreign policy that he ran on, how can he do it now?
Yeah, and it's really hard to figure out where Trump's coming from. It's important, but I don't think we're going to ever find that out until we look at this years down the road and the historians look at it. Because, you know, he has said one thing, and he probably has some good instincts. I think he has America, you know, concerns for the goodness of America. But what he does is so bizarre. And we don't know where he stands, and that's the reason we can't anticipate what he's going to do. But the big question is he a neocon? I sort of doubt that. Mm-hmm. But why does he go along with the neocons? He doesn't seem like a weakling. But what if he deep down inside had a weak streak in him that he has to cover up by being a tough guy? And then that's dangerous, because the weaker he gets, the more tough guy he has to be. And it concerns me that we have an administration. I wonder if there's a record number of generals that this administration has. They've always had some generals involved, but they've had a bunch of military influence. And, of course, Trump brags about how great the military is, and he puts them on a pedestal. Yeah. And I happen to think the military is great if they were defending our country, but not participating in aggression. And with a little bit of experience in the military, I know exactly the uselessness of so much of our policy. It still bewilders me how some individuals can rationalize, and there are several, I won't mention their names, but there are several who lost children in the war and with bad policy. And sometimes, Basevich lost a child, and he sort of reassessed his policy. But now we have several examples where they lose children, and it doesn't. He's a hero. He was defending our country, and we know they're not defending our country. Yes, people are coming here. They're coming here to destroy us. They hate us for our freedoms and our liberties and our prosperity. And that's all an excuse to continue the maintenance of an empire that we established after World War II that depended on secrecy and influence and control of elections, which is ironic. Now, this one little suggestion in that maybe we're willing to, practically go to war, but it's their excuse to perpetuate what they want to do anyway. This is a neat little thing, but it's disgusting that it's so universally accepted. You know, in Washington, even the administration that suffers the most from it, and, you know, Trump could have trouble surviving his whole four-year term, and yet there's no resistance. You know, he continues to hire people that they're arguing the same case.
Who disagree with him. Well, you know, the Rybakov, I think his name is, he's a top guy in Russia. He called the sanctions weird, these new sanctions. I think that's about right. But I think what we're seeing, you know, sort of in closing, is that with this move, Russia is pushing back. You know, Putin, I think cleverly, didn't react to Obama's expulsion as he was on his way out of office, because he was going to allow Trump to redefine Russia policy. Well, Trump did not do that. On the contrary, we can't blame the sanctions bill on Trump, but he certainly hasn't pushed back. So seeing Russia pushing back now, doing something to push back, makes me wonder what the next move is, and it doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't look good, and it looks like empires have come and gone throughout history, and the suggestion is that's the way the world has to has to be run, you know, through empires and influence and power. And when there was a vacuum after the Cold War ended and the Soviets collapsed, that we had to fulfill that role. But I don't know why we can't think that the human race can evolve a little bit on the positive side and say that, well, maybe just smaller governments emphasizing personal liberty and minding our own business might not be a better way to go, and that we can accept those ideas. But it's to me, it's an intellectual fight, and whether it's good economic policy or foreign policy, it's ideological, and that's where I think we're making progress. When you go to Washington, look at this nonsense that's going on, you'd say there's no progress whatsoever. But I do believe there's progress. I believe the system that we have today, the setup we have around the world, will end, and that we will have an opportunity, and hopefully intellectually and ideologically, we have progressed to the point where we can institute and promote ideas that concentrate on personal liberty rather than a grandiose scheme for using power to oppress other people. And I think we've drifted too close to that position, and hopefully we will change that and strive much more for a system that emphasizes our liberties. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.